From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Election Day when New York State seemed to snuff out several third parties. The rules had changed, and not every political party survived those rules changes in this year's election. Let me read now from City and State New York, quote, "Only two minor parties in New York will keep their ballot access. The fate of New York's third parties was up in the air this year, and as the dust settles after Election Day, it appears only two of the state's six minor parties will keep their ballot lines. But the other third parties are not giving up just yet, as they plan their next steps to overturn the new laws regarding ballot access. This year, the state required third parties to secure either 130,000 votes or 2% of the vote cast, whichever was higher. As of now, only the Working Families Party and Conservative Party mustered enough support to keep their ballot lines past the end of this year. Based on the immediate results, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris on the WFP line had about 4.41% of that vote. Donald Trump and Mike Pence received about 3.85% of the vote on the Conservative Party line. Three other parties nominated their own candidates for president, and they each fell well short of the new requirements. Howie Hawkins, I got only about 23,000 votes on the Green Party line. Joe Jorgensen, 47,745 votes on the Libertarian Party line. And Brock Pierce, 17,600 votes on the Independence Party line, not to be confused with independents who are unaffiliated with any party. The final official third party in the state is the Serve America movement. They did not nominate a candidate for president. It, along with the Libertarian Party, qualified for automatic ballot access for the first time in only 2018. So for the Working Families Party, there's kind of deadline coming up here. The party wants to stay engaged, to push Democrats to the left, to push them on the issues, to re-engage with issues pertaining to American workers, and they want candidates on the ballot next year. That means they want candidates to fill out endorsement questionnaires by the end of next week. But maybe you're wondering, do third parties still have power and influence? Should they? Was this a good idea for New York State to sort of pare down the number of third parties in the state? Well, let's talk about it. Jesse Lenny is a state committee member of the New York Working Families Party from Congressional District 25 and never shy with sharing his opinions. Jesse, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan. Good to be here.
Before we get to that, though, let me just mention a couple of things here because listeners may be wondering, where is the governor? The governor plans throughout this winter, as far as we know anyway, to do Monday, Wednesday, Friday briefings on COVID-19 vaccination efforts, et cetera, related issues. We have not heard from the governor if he's going to do a briefing today, but that could be because right now the Electoral College electors from New York State are voting, just as electors are voting across the country in their various states. And I'm pretty sure Governor Cuomo is one of the electors. Do you know Jesse Lenny? Is Governor Cuomo one of the electors in the Electoral College?
I'm not 100%, but I believe so. I think he was the chair of the committee from New York, but I'm pretty certain he is. But
okay.
I'm not 100%.
Yeah, sure. I think, look, I don't keep making my business to know every elector in the Electoral College, but I think he is. The Clintons are involved. There's a lot of sort of bigger names in politics who are electors. They are meeting, so that is likely what the governor's doing over the next half hour to 60 minutes. If the governor's going to come in with a briefing on COVID vaccination, it's possible we'll get you up to date on that whenever it happens. And, of course, you will hear it live. We just don't have any news on that. But you might have seen this morning the first person vaccinated in New York State was a black woman receiving the vaccine from another black woman against a virus that has disproportionately killed black Americans. Nurse Sarah Lindsay is a clinician, and the clinician vaccinating her, posing for pictures this morning, you might have seen Sandra Lindsay. Sandra Lindsay is the first person in New York State vaccinated against this novel coronavirus and COVID-19. And so that means the Pfizer vaccines are here. 170,000 doses of Pfizer's initial round is here, starting in New York City, but there are delivery trucks on their way all over the state. We expect Rochester to start, I don't know if it's today or tomorrow, but it's going to happen, starting in really every part of the state now. And we are already seeing it in New York City. Moderna's 346,000 vaccine doses arrive next week, and they will go right out as well. And we will keep you up to date as much as we can as to the vaccination efforts. And again, when the governor wants to jump in here, we will certainly have time to take his comments in today's briefing. All right, Jesse Lenny. So let me just start with the news from this year. Did New York State try to kneecap you guys? Is that what happened? How do you view what happened with the rules changes this year?
Well, I mean, I can't speak to any intentions, but the changes were onerous in a number of ways. The 130,000 votes for us wouldn't be a problem. We've been doing this for 20 years. We've been able to build a base of people who know us and trust us and use the line. But a lot of parties haven't had the 20-year head start that we've had. The 2% is what we were most worried about, especially because we thought, and we were happy to realize a huge turnout this year. I mean, I'm glad to be wrong about this. I'm not usually wrong. But I was concerned that with millions of new people voting, maybe for the first time in a long time, you know, they had almost no experience with us, that they wouldn't use the line this year. But it you know, turned out to be the opposite. And there's I've heard a number of interesting thoughts about that. I can't read all of their minds either. But, you know, I think it was onerous in that there were several new parties that were not really, who worked really hard to set up an organization, the Libertarians, the SAM Party in particular. And they just, you know, weren't given the time to introduce themselves to make the new threshold. And in our case, I think the percentage is going to be onerous. It's going to be tough every 2 years because now we have to qualify every 2 years.
Okay, so but hold on. Let me just kind of push a little bit on that idea. You said that, you know, they worked really hard to sort of set up the party, the SAM party, the Serve America movement. What even is that? What is that?
You know, I've done a little bit of research. I read the bylaws, which is it's interesting for probably a bunch of reasons nobody cares about but me. But there was several there was actually several local people who ran a primary against each other for their state committee, which we have yet to have in even the WFC. You know, we have 12 committee members here in Monroe County representing the 25th. So, but that's the number we need. So we haven't, it wasn't competitive, but the first year out, they had a primary and, you know, the folks do, I talked to one of them and, you know, this is a regular person. They work all day and they're doing this. They were interested in an alternative to the major parties and offered to volunteer to do it. You know, so I just think, you know, I may not agree with some of their policies, you know, especially don't agree with a lot of libertarian policies, but I just feel like as an American, if people want to assemble in this way to voice their free speech rights, I think making it more difficult for people to do that is just in general bad, even if their ideas aren't, you know, what I would like them to be.
All right, fair enough. And as much as I push and say, what is the Serve America movement? You're right. It takes time to build up infrastructure for a party. It takes time to build up public recognition. And my bias on the table, I tend to think that more options, more voices, more speech, the better. And I think more options for political parties to form, the better here, Jesse. I mean, I look at politics around the world. Most don't really do it our way. I mean, is there a system that you like? Do you like parliamentary system better? Do you like ranked choice voting better? Do you like sort of coalition government forming better? What do you like compared to this system?
I'm only starting to have the luxury to research other places because I've been sort of buried in New York State politics, you know, in a foxhole up to my neck for a long time. But we don't even have to look to other countries. I mean, we can look to other states, other cities. I do like instant runoff voting. I think that allows people to sort of be aspirational about their first vote, but then their second vote can be more pragmatic. But I think there's all sorts of other. I mean, there's all sorts of other research that I have not done and can't speak about. I mean, other cities, for example, I'm going to say the wrong one, so I'm not going to say one. But I know there are cities in Connecticut where it's like proportional, where the highest voting party gets a number of seats and then the second highest voting party gets a number of seats. So traditionally that's been Democrat and Republican until now. In some places in the country, I'm not going to be able to name the cities, the Working Families Party has become the second party in those cities. So, you know, there's something in their bylaws or charter that says it has to be bipartisan. It can't be an all Democratic board, for example. So thinking that there's going to be at least one seat that's Republican, some of those cities, that seat is a Working Families Party person or has been, you know, and if a caller asks where that is, I'm going to not be able to answer it, but it does exist. remember states control election laws. We are a union of states and elections are run by the states. And so every state's different. In some places, cities have the right to do things different. Counties have the right to do things different. So there's a ton of options, and none of them are perfect. But I think we've been doing a lot of work to make them more perfect, or less imperfect in New York.
Yeah, and look, I don't mean to be cynical about political parties, but it was within the last decade. I don't even remember when it started, and it seems to have disappeared. That I think it was Governor Cuomo, and was it Kathy Hochul involved in the creation of the? Was it the New York Women's Party? What was it called?
The Women's Equality Party.
Women's Equality Party. Look, I'm like, that's like, a basket of puppies party. Nobody's against it, but I don't know what it was formed to do other than...
Well, kill us. That's what it's formed.
It was formed to kill you?
Not when I could speak to intention. I mean, when I just said I wasn't going to speak to... I wasn't going to speak to...
Go for
intention,
it.
But of course I did. But again, after... That was, just think about if we just look at just the money was spent on the getting the votes to that party, it all came out of a Democratic committee, namely the ones controlled by the governor, and that was got the votes. But as soon as that party existed, there was like earnest people who joined up. I know several people who joined, and although because of what we perceived as the intentions of that party, we were sort of not comfortable with it. We thought of it as opposition to us. But when I started seeing the people who were joining, friends of mine who were earnest, people that were trying to do good in politics, I was excited about the possibilities because there should be more parties. And obviously, women aren't a special interest. Women are the majority of voters. But I think there's room for that if there was enough energy behind it. I just think the way the system... We have a bunch of proposals to make the system more fair and more accountable, frankly, because to have a political party is a lot of power, and there should be some accountability to the voters in exchange for having that power. But if those folks who came together were able to build up a head of steam and make that party a legitimate organization, which they were working on, I would have been fine because there's a ton of issues that we can't prioritize all the time that they could have, which would have been good.
But it really wasn't a real party. I mean, it did look like sort of a cynical operation. And it's gone now, as far as I know, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah. Well, all the parties are gone except for the conservatives and us.
The Conservative Party and the Working Families Party in New York State, at least, though. I mean, of course, there is a Libertarian Party. There is a Green Party.
True. To be honest, anyone who's mad at me right now should be, because in most states, the Working Families Party doesn't have a ballot line. I mean, in... Fusion voting was so effective for workers, for people of color, for people who were disenfranchised by the major system that they made it illegal in most states because it threatened the power structure. So it was legal. It was the law of the land in 50 states. But once people started figuring out how to use it and used it to the benefit of their constituencies, it became illegal in 44 states. So now there's only a few states that we have this, so what they call a constituted legal political party, and New York's one of them. In most of the states where the WFP does work, we don't have that. We operate as as you just mentioned, the libertarians will operate where we're just a group of people that maybe incorporate as a C4 or something like that, and we do political work together and have a platform and do everything that a party would try to do without the legal structure behind it. And then that's perfectly legitimate. It's just sort of unfortunate that people who choose to be members of the Democrats or Republicans get the benefit of being the legal structure, where the rest of us, in most states, don't have access to it.
Talking to Jesse Lenny, a state committee member of the New York Working Families Party from Congressional District number 25. And if you're just joining us, the news is that in New York State, only the Working Families Party and the Conservative Party has got enough votes in this year's election to keep ballot access in the future elections. And so hard times for third parties in this state, and maybe by design for some of the major party and stakeholders who didn't want those sort of voices. But we're talking about what this means going forward. I've got some emails I'll read from you coming up here. But listeners, if you want to call and make comments, I'm very curious to know, do you vote third party? Whether that is you're marking a third party line, or would you rather see third parties run their own candidates? How do you feel that third parties do at influencing policy, ideas, and elections? It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Email us, connections@WXXI.org. Before we dive into some feedback, Jesse Lenny, I know there are some essentially some deadlines coming up here because the Working Families Party survived this challenge in New York State. You've got ballot access. But if you're going to have people on your line, what do you need?
So the it's great that we survived and we did well. Some of the things that come with that is there's a group of maybe 20 or so volunteers that with me have to are sort of as a tradition. We'll sit down with probably over 100 candidates this year just in Monroe County and almost 1,000, probably more than 1,000 across the state to have an interview with them, 15, 20, half an hour, 40 minutes sometimes. And that's a ton of work. So as I was sort of sending out some emails to some people that I know are interested in politics to encourage them to apply, I thought, wow, it's not even Christmas and we're doing it. That sort of prompted my email to you. And it just sounds crazy even for me to say it, but we really do need, if people are even considering running for office next year, which everyone should, we really need the questionnaire done by before Christmas or just after Christmas, because you know, I was just looking at the calendar. We really need to start scheduling interviews the first week of January because petitioning starts like in the February 20th or so, February 23rd maybe. We don't know that for sure yet, but that's about when it will be. And only because this is all a volunteer operation, if we have to interview 100 people, I mean, most of us either have other endeavors or full-time jobs, so we can't do that in a week. So unless the only way to have a really good group of people that, you know, have that are workers, that have day jobs, that have families, so that they can't do this full-time, is if we spread it out. So we do 20, 25 people a week. And the only way to do that is if people get their questionnaire in. So, I mean, we try to be flexible. The worst part of this work that I've done in the last 15 years is when you have to say you can't, you know, someone just stepped up to serve their community in this way and you can't help them. You can't reach out to them because you're out of time or you just can't put a group together. You know, volunteers have just done 50, 60 hours worth of interviews and they're worn out. You know, you can't get them back together. You have to tell a candidate, like, we're not going to like not do our process just because you're late. It's just, you know, that's the saddest part of the job. So we don't want to do that, but we do have to do it every year. There's always a few people who just don't make it. And sometimes they don't follow their own. They just, especially because the deadline's so early. So thank you for putting us on because I wanted to, because especially in the outlying counties, Yates County, Steuben County, Livingston County, Seneca County, I'm talking to folks out there, please. You know, it's a very fun questionnaire. It's only 70, it's only 25 pages long. It's only 70 questions.
25 pages, dude.
It's and that's we try to cut it down every year, so that's a little better.
Anybody thinking about running for office just decided not to. I'm kidding.
It's funny the responses I get from like cursing me out to like people who are excited about it, and I'm just the people who are excited about it. I just.
All right, hold on. In a moment, I'm going to take Rich in Penfield on the phone with our first call, and then I've got some emails to read. But briefly on the questionnaire, I know, you know, you probably the Conservative Party has their own, and they probably want to hear from possible candidates. Candidates for which kinds of office, Jesse Lenny?
You know, I was just going to the list is not out yet, but what I did, and I should have it up in front of me, is. You know, typically people run, we have 4-year terms in general. Sometimes they're 2, sometimes they're 6, sometimes there's 10. So if you look back to 2017, the types of races that are up, every town in Monroe County and every town across the New York State, there's hundreds of them. So most of them have town boards. So usually, and this is things are different, but usually 2 of the town board members will run this year. And then 2 years from now, the other 2 will run. And so those seats are all up. Most towns have supervisors that run this year. In our case, our mayor is up in Rochester, plus the at-large city council. So those are big races. There will be big primaries. There's also 3 county court race seats up, and that's because Judge Randall is running for re-election, and I imagine he's going to run for re-election. I haven't talked to him yet, and I will call you back, Judge. And then there's 2 open seats because 2 of our judges moved up to the Supreme Court. So that's going to be an exciting race and an opportunity to put some good people on the bench. There's also going to be a Supreme Court. So it runs the gamut. Supreme Court's the highest court in the land. So you have everywhere from the town board member in Riga, which is a very important town and a very important business to take care of, but also Supreme Court, which can handle almost any case they want. So I think I counted about a little over 110 positions just in Monroe County, and there's, you know, there's 200 positions in Erie County. There's dozens of positions open in each of the other counties in between us.
All right. And if you want to find this questioner and you actually want to do this, how do you do it?
The easiest way is just to go online. I mean, I could give you my email or any number, but I would just check out workingfamilies.org and then try to follow the prompts in New York State. I think actually New York State, and then you'll see it. It won't be right on the national, because we have a national organization that, because there's so many states that are operating as a party, even though they're not sanctioned by they're not given approval by the state governments in those states, they're still functioning as a party. So we have a national website, and you can find New York there, and then right in the beginning of that, you'll find the endorsement questionnaire. Or, we can tweet my contact information, and I can get people there fast.
Well, and I should also say to listeners, Jesse Lenny was chivalrous enough to push us and try to bring in some members of the Conservative Party as well, who are probably in the same boat, and they're the only other third party in New York State that survived the new rules this year. No one from the Conservative Party was available, but we appreciate that, and we want listeners to think, if that would be the direction you go in, get in touch with them, because they may have their own questions and deadlines, et cetera, as well. Let me grab Rich in Penfield on the phone. Go ahead, Rich.
Hi, Evan. I wanted to share some observations I had this year. I had worked a polling site in New York, and one of the things that the machine would do is it would reject a ballot if the voter had selected a candidate on more than one party line. Mm-hmm. And I was actually pretty impressed, because the error message that would come back is, you know, while we clearly know exactly who you want to vote for, we're confused because you have selected the candidate on multiple party lines. So when giving the voter the opportunity to take his ballot and to, you know, create a spoil ballot and redo it, most people were extremely apathetic as to what party they were supporting a particular candidate on. And it happened quite often, to be honest with you. I know personally I will vote for a candidate on one of the third party lines just in order to give that vote to that party as well.
Okay. Jesse, you want
to... I just wanted to share that observation, that I think the majority of voters are pretty apathetic as to which party there's backing the candidate that they want to support.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jesse, what do you think?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the most important choice voters have is the person who's going to represent them. I'm happy to be secondary to that, because that is the most important choice. And so, I don't know what percentage. I mean, obviously, everyone who uses a third party chose to move. So I think all of us that vote third party are interested in that, the second choice, which is what party platform, what do you want to use to communicate. And I also think a lot of people who are Democrats and Republicans are either, you know, voting out of loyalty to a party. Those parties have been around for 160 years. They haven't been around forever, but they've been around for a long time. Some of them are voting out of loyalty and deference and trust in those two major parties. Some of them are voting because they have animus towards the other party. And that's important, too. But I don't disagree with the caller that there's a bunch of folks who are they're interested in the person. And not the party, and that's fine. And, you know, I think that's fine.
All right. Anything you want to add, Rich?
Nope, I'm good.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate that. It's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And you can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Charles writes to us, Jesse, to say, New York's third-party rules absolutely impact my voting choices. Obviously, I understand that both Gary Johnson and Joe Jorgensen were unlikely to be elected president, but determined that a vote for them in New York would go farther than a vote for President Trump would in the state of New York for me, and would also have the added benefit of there being two parties I agree with on the issues that the Democrats have to contend with. That's from Charles, from a conservative perspective, and just endorsing the idea that that more options is better there. What would you say to Charles?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I try not to be too dismissive of third parties who, you know, some of the people accuse of spoiling or whatever, because I think voters are smart enough to know the difference, to know what they're doing. But and I also, it's not my place to tell voters what to do. I mean, I try to tell voters what to do all the time. That's my job. But voters are the ones who run this country. But one thing I would debate with voters is that if you choose to vote for someone who you know can't win, or you choose not to vote, which is a legitimate choice. It's a free country. Basically, in my opinion, and I think this is just math, you are silence is consent. So when you vote, when you don't vote, and I've actually talked to a lot of people who don't vote, and I think this is where they're getting at. You are basically saying whatever the majority decides, whatever the other people decide is fine with me. So not voting is not a protest. Not voting is actually consent. And so, you know, we can debate. That's, I would be well happy to vote to debate that. Although I would tell everybody has a right not to vote or to vote their party or to vote for someone that you almost 99% isn't going to win, especially in a state where you know the outcome, like the caller mentioned. But I think people should know that's what you're doing. You're saying it's a, like, I don't care what happens. Or not that you don't care, but you're okay with whatever the rest of us decide. And, you know, if you're okay with that, then that's how you should vote. But people shouldn't think it's a protest. I would argue they shouldn't think it's a protest. They shouldn't think that, like, a lot of other things. Basically, when you don't vote, you're basically consenting to whatever the rest of us decide, which, I appreciate people's confidence, but I think they should have the right to decide, too.
Jesse, do you think, generally speaking, political leaders in Democratic and Republican circles want there to be fewer parties and are happy with the outcome of limiting third-party access?
You're asking me to read someone's mind, but I think most of the people that I've met that work in both major parties are volunteers. And even when I don't agree with them, they're folks that believe in this country, they believe in our community, and they're trying to do something. For the most part, now the people on the other side, now that we've spent 20 years and we've won a supermajority for the Democrats in the Senate, and we have the Democrats have the Assembly, the governor's race. Now, all of a sudden, Republicans and conservatives are going to say it's monopoly, it's one party rule. Well, in most parts of New York State, it's one party rule. Most towns, most counties are run totally by Republicans. Most cities are run by Democrats. And that's the main reason I think that it's so important to have other voices. Because while CNN and the major media outlets may try to make it turn into some kind of football game, truth of the matter is most of our towns and governments in New York State, at least, are one party rule. There's a handful of towns that I can name that are competitive where Democrats and Republicans are still running against each other. In some places, conservatives run against Republicans because there's just no, so I just think when having a political party is very powerful. That's why we want to have it. So what people tend to have is when they have power, they want to keep it. And they don't want anyone else to have it. So as Americans, we have to resist that tendency. I don't think people wake up every day, maybe some people, but I wouldn't accuse someone of that because it's un-American. But I think the tendency is when people get power, they want to hold it. They don't want anybody else to have it.
Talking to Jesse Lenny, a state committee member of the New York Working Families Party from Congressional District 25. The Working Families Party is looking at essentially a deadline at the end of next week. They want to know who's looking for endorsements, and they want to have people on the WFP line, and they would love to hear from people who are running for office next year. If it feels like we just had an election, I get that. But only two third parties survived the new rules, the Conservative Party and the Working Families Party, and they want to stay organized and looking forward, and that's what we're talking about. Let's take our only break of the hour, and when we come back, we've got more emails for Jesse Lenny, and we'll talk about the future of third parties and what they can and can't get done in this state coming up. Coming up in our second hour, Monroe County had a serious battle over parts of its budget, leading some members of the Democratic Party to vote with Republicans. And the county executive chastising some members of his own party. We're going to talk with members of all sides of the legislature next hour, and they'll have a conversation, a debate of sorts, over how your tax dollars are being spent during the pandemic. That's next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get back to your phone calls. This is Teta in Rochester next. Go ahead, Teta.
Hi. I've had the privilege of living in many countries throughout my lifetime. When I was a teenager living in Vienna, we had people running out of Hungary and sometimes getting shot or dying because they wanted to have the freedom to be able to vote, to be able to be citizens. And as such, I would submit that there are two categories of human beings, people who wish to take responsibility for life, who vote, who are citizens, and people who don't wish to take responsibility and wish to be sheep, and I think they should be referred to as inhabitants. And I further believe, just like in Athens, they should be taxed more heavily.
Jesse Lenny? Are you there, Jesse? Oh, we lost Jesse for a second.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Jesse. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I don't want to bore your listeners with my personal business, but I've been looking for work, so I've had some time on my hands. So I've gone back and listened to a lot of your shows, and not that I always listen, but I listened to the rest of them. And one of them was interesting, is you actually had some speakers talk about that, and I couldn't make up my mind either. Like I think it's something. Part of me says that not participating is a choice, I think the choice is, like I said, and someone could debate this if they like, the choice is to say, I leave it up to others to make this decision. That's your choice when you don't vote, and I don't know if that's like a bad thing. And
I think it's like failing to pay your child support when you are one of the two biological parents who produced a child. If you are too lazy to vote, then you should pay 10% more in taxes. In ancient Greece, your clothing was daubed with black tar if you didn't show up in time to vote.
Oh, wow. That's great. Well, what do you think about this, if Evan doesn't mind me asking? Most of the people, I mean, I would never say anything bad about any voter because my job is to get them to help people get elected. So I'm certainly not going to badmouth anybody. But most of the people I've talked to who don't vote, this is what they say to me, is that since they don't know enough about the races, they don't feel it's right for them to make a decision on something they don't fully understand. Now, I tell them, well, all you got to do is just do what I tell you to do, and then you'll be fine, right? But they don't like that either, because they don't like being told what to do because they're Americans, right? So, people who vote on our line I vote on our line even when I don't know the race, because I trust that there was some kind of process and some of my colleagues made a decision, and that's better than me going alone. But I think now we should make it easier for them to get information so they can make the decision. But I can't really argue that they should have to be forced to make a decision that they don't feel comfortable making. Now,
I said motivated. If you cannot be responsible enough to inform yourself, in Greece, if you showed up late in Athens to the city meetings, which was only males who were not slaves, if you arrived late, the ropes were marked with tar so that entering the meeting, your clothing was tarred and clothing was expensive. You were punished for failing to show up in a timely manner to the town meeting. It's called responsibility. It's called accountability. If you want to be an inhabitant, then pay the price of 10% higher taxes. I sincerely mean it.
I think Evan did a show that they did a much better job than. I mean, I'm not sure if that's how I feel. So I think what you said was very interesting. But Evan did a show. I mean, am I right, Evan? You did a show where they really sort of dug into that.
Yeah, and if we want, I can try to dig it up on our – we've got everything archived on our Connections page. It's wxxinews.org/connections. So, Ted, I can look there, but, yeah, I'm not exactly sure.
One thing I think about as a practitioner, though, is, like, part of my job is to help candidates inspire people to go. And with it being New York State, thankfully, making it so much more easy – where you can apply for a ballot, it comes to your house, you can sit down with the internet, you can learn. Now it's much easier. I imagined like maybe someday we'd have in the polling booths, we'd put up, descriptions of each of the parties and we'd have, but it's a lot of work. But now that we can, almost like a third of us vote at home. If you're one of those voters who thinks it's irresponsible to vote because you don't know, they can take the 15, 20 minutes to go online and do some research. I've called people on the phone in the voting booth saying, hey, I don't remember what we're doing. What do you know about this judge? What do you know? I mean, I do this for a living and I don't know every single person on a ballot. You think that's true. I think I don't know every single person on my ballot, let alone the rest of the state. And there's hundreds of people running. So, I think part of the reason you saw such a good turnout is because people who did not feel confident walking in and making a split second decision. A lot of times the first time they see the name is on the ballot because they don't hear the TV. They don't hear the social media. They don't hear the radio. I'm not disagreeing with the caller because the caller is a voter and I try not to do that. But I understand the anxiety of not making an informed decision.
Yeah.
Especially when you don't have an affinity or loyalty to a party. For me, if there's someone on the ballot I really don't know, like this year, I didn't make all the interviews this past year because I just couldn't. There was people on the ballot I didn't know nothing about, but because I knew people that were earnest and cared about the process, sat down with those folks and interviewed them, at least talked to them about our issues, I felt confident I could vote even though I didn't know. 100% for sure.
All right, let me get Maggie in Rochester following up from Ted's call. Go ahead, Maggie.
Hi. So, first of all, hi, Jesse. Jesse and I are old friends. It's good to hear you, boss. And but I just wanted to comment that I think that the caller is very passionate, this idea that people have a personal responsibility to vote and that they should be ostracized or punished if they don't. But I think that it ignores the fact that there has been an absolutely massive effort to disenfranchise voters in this country. And so the idea that everyone has this equal opportunity to vote and that they don't, and that it's this personal responsibility that they choose to exercise or not exercise, simply isn't true, right? And so I think we have to remember that voting is both a fundamental civil liberty that's under attack and that needs protection, and it's an individual choice that people make to participate in a system that they have varying levels of trust in, right? So I think that Working Families Party is wonderful, and I vote on the Working Families Party line personally, but I think that to get drawn into this discussion about whether we should punish people for not voting without talking about disenfranchisement specifically of Black Americans, of Native Americans, of Latinx Americans and people, like, it's just ignores the systemic racism and classism that are intentional disenfranchising barriers to voting. Thanks
for the phone call, Maggie. Jesse Lenny, go ahead.
I appreciate Maggie taking the opportunity to call me boss, which is like, and not use a swear word, but that's an inside joke because I don't like being called boss. Being boss is a tough job. I think both Maggie's point and the caller's point are valid. I think what I would add is that I think they're not wrong, but I think what we'd miss if people were obligated to go in is the need for candidates and political parties to motivate people to come in. And because I think there's something to that, that it's the people have to be inspired. It makes our job more harder, but you know, I'm not sure we want to lose that yet, especially in a year where, I mean, I predicted turnout to be like over like 80% or so. I think we got close, right? I don't know, which is embarrassing, turnout was like the highest ever. So I think this is not the time to jump down the throats of people who didn't show up, because for the most part, they did. And I will also remind people when they say 75%, I've gone door to door in a lot of our neighborhoods, and it's not that 25% are not voting. It's that, 5-10% of them have died. And the average voter is like 65. And so unfortunately, a few of them have died and it just hasn't updated yet. 10 or 15% of us have to move because we couldn't pay the rent in that particular place. We had to go to another place, or we're living with family members. So a lot of people that are on the rolls that don't vote, it's not that they chose not to vote. It's not really there. So even when you look at whatever the number was today, I hope everyone knows what it is, but this year, it's actually higher than that, because our Board of Elections, particularly in Monroe County, does not want to disenfranchise somebody. So even though they may know that the person doesn't live there, just in case they leave the person on the list, in case the person does live there and they just weren't home or we couldn't find them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me clear something up from an email from Barry. And I don't think I did a very good job of explaining this at the outset, so I'm going to explain here. Barry says, shouldn't we at least hear something from the third parties who've been denied status as third parties in New York State? Are they denied status on your show now? No, Barry. And it's a fair question. So let me be clear about a couple of things. Number one, when Jesse Lenny reached out, he wasn't saying, you know, too bad for the Greens and Libertarians, let's throw dirt on them. He was saying, he's concerned about ballot access for everybody, didn't like the new rules, but given the new rules, the Working Families Party and Conservative Party survived it, and now they've got their own deadlines coming up to get questionnaires done for endorsements and to try to round up candidates who are going to run next year. They're already looking ahead to next year because they will have ballot access. So that's what this conversation is partially about. That's why we reached out to conservatives and WFP. When it comes to libertarians, Greens, third parties, they are welcome on the show. We have done, I'm willing to say, we've done more in local journalism with third parties than just about any other platform. And we're going to continue to do that, especially when people do have lines on the ballot. My view is not, what do the polls say? If the polls, a lot of campaigns will have, you know, the Democrats up 51-45 and a third party's got 4% or something. Well, so what? I don't care. My view is if you're on the ballot, they ought to have a chance and have a voice and be there. Considering the fact that New York State is limiting who can be on the ballot in the future, we'll have to rethink some of how we do some interviewing here. But I've always believed in more voices represented in the public square, on programs like this one, in debates, you know, taken seriously. Polling does not drive what we do here. It will not drive what we do in the future, and I feel strongly about that. So just to clear that up, that's why it's represented the way it is today, but you're going to hear plenty of Greens, Libertarians, et cetera, in the future on this program. Andrew in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to call in response to the caller who called in a few minutes ago talking about incentivizing people to vote as individuals. And I think she is paying attention to the wrong part. I think that the system itself, because it is not a purely representative democracy, it itself is a disincentive to go vote. You know, this all or none electoral system that we have in most states isn't really making me want to go vote, because in most places I know that my individual vote won't matter. And I understand that if everybody did that, the whole system would break down. But that argument still doesn't take away from the fact that if we're going to point fingers at incentives, I think that we need to be talking about the system that we have itself as being sort of disincentivizing me from wanting to vote to begin with, because it's not a representative democracy as it was in Athens.
Okay. Jesse Lenny, what do you think?
I think those are all valid points. I don't have much to add.
Andrew, thank you. Fair enough there. I've got a lot of emails to keep working through here. I'm going to read two for you, Jesse, that have sort of similar themes. Kenzie writes to say, why does the Working Families Party not field its own candidates, but instead cross-endorses candidates from other parties? And a different Andrew emails to say, when I think of third parties, I think about AOC and the Squad. They're Democrats, yes, but are they really Democrats? I view them as social Democrats, moving the party in the direction that the centrists like Biden would not otherwise go. Does your guest view AOC as representing a kind of third party? Jesse Lenny.
They're very different questions, so thank you for asking them at the same time. And unfortunately, I just said I didn't want to disagree with a voter, but I did want to disagree with you at the outcome of the candidate, because we do field our own candidates. First I want to give credit to the people who do most of the work. Most of the work in recruiting candidates, in my opinion, is done by the local town chairs, who are mostly or all volunteers, in as far as I can see. They're the ones talking to their neighbors about running, so I want to make sure they get the credit. But we also do that work. We recruit people to run. They are people who they do their politics with us, or they do some community work. And then now that they're thinking about getting into politics, they start with the Working Families Party. We recruit them, we train them, we support them through the process. And as part of that process, they are moving towards getting our endorsements with the normal process. But then they go ask the Democratic Party for the endorsement too. And the reason that is because in some parts of the state, you need two political parties, two ballot lines to win. And the only way you can make policy is if you win. And so some fraction, not, you know, like I said, there's going to be 1,200, 1,300 people apply for a line. And I'm talking 100, 150. You know, I think that's ambitious. Some of them initiated out of the political, out of us. Rachel May, our senator in central New York, who was just until this election, was one of only three senators from upstate New York. Now there is 2, 4, 6, 8 senators from New York, from upstate New York, and maybe 9 if you count someone in Hudson Valley. Rachel May was told not to run by the Democratic Party. Rachel May ran the first race in her life, was for state Senate, which is a huge race against one of the most powerful Democrats in that region, with only our help, her family's help, her friends' help, and some activists who were frustrated with what this person who represented the major party was doing. So she's a Democrat. She's a loyal Democrat. But she also was one of us. She was one of our own and would never have run if we didn't ask her 12 times and then support her all the way through. And even now, as much as we can. So not just one person, but that's important. And all the work that each of these towns, these Democratic and Republican town chairs do is also important. So just because they only run on a single party doesn't mean that just most candidates run on two lines. So it doesn't mean that they automatically are the major party candidate. Some of them were recruited by us. And the conservatives, I think, do the same thing.
But most of the time, though, I think it's unfair to view WFP as just grabbing Democrats and getting them on their line too. I understand the point you're making, Jesse. But
most of the time, that's what we're doing because the chairs of those towns, the volunteers in those towns, are doing the vast majority of the work, but not all the time.
Okay,
so 110 people, Democrats, 110 Republicans, and then some more. Will run this year, you know, I mean, maybe 5 or 6 of them, maybe 10 of them got the idea to run that, but from us.
Yeah. Okay.
But most of them, you know.
That's fair enough. No, but the reason I viewed those two emails as somewhat similar is this. You and I have talked in the past about this, Jesse, that you don't feel that a third party like WFP has to, quote, just run your own candidates to oppose the Democrats, to oppose Republicans, that you can be sort of in a cross-endorsed state and push the party, the Democratic Party, in different policy directions that it might not otherwise go. And this listener, Andrew, is saying he views AOC and the squad as sort of effectively doing that, that yes, they're Democrats, but they're social Democrats, and that they, from within the Democratic Party, are moving it in different directions. I mean, you don't see any overlap there in themes?
I mean, AOC, she certainly can speak for herself. So I don't want anybody to think I'm speaking for her. But,
no, I take it.
But,
yeah.
But most candidates that I work with would say they are loyal Democrats. They're not just saying that because for whatever reason. They are. Even if they have a strong affinity for the Working Families Party. You can be both. It's not like we're not trying to steal candidates away from them. We actually push candidates into the Democratic Party. One, because we know you need 2 bat lines in most cases to win. But also because there's good people in the Democratic Party. If it was up to me, if we had the resources, I would be recruiting progressive, pro-union Republicans to run in some of these places all around the state where only Republicans can win. And because I've gotten calls from those folks saying, I need help because the folks in my town board are blowing the budget and wasting money over here, or they're doing something I don't believe in, or they spend the winters in Florida when they're supposed to be working. And they're Republicans. So if I had the resources, I would love to help those people. They could be working family Republicans. But the people and my friends are like losing their mind right now. But there's no reason why we want people to get support from as many groups as we can. Now, sometimes when we have to, when legally we are denied the opportunity to do that, like when there's every time there's a special election, a third of the New York State legislature at some point was elected by special elections, which means no primaries. So that means the parties decide who runs. And there's been a number of examples where the Democratic Party picked a person, no primary, no even chance for the voters. So we ran somebody on our own. Diana Richardson is an assembly member now who ran only on the WFP line and won against the Democrat in New York City. We ran Bill Johnson here in 2011, Rochester, and came close. I think we got like 46%, something like that. Probably the number keeps going up. In my memory, but it was a competitive race against the Democratic Party. And, when we have to, we try to win on, and even then we had the Independence Party line. Even then we needed 2 lines to win. So, it's not as simple as, it's not a cartoon. It's complicated. And the reason we don't promote them as this person's a Working Families Party candidate and this person's a Democratic candidate is because why would we do that? Why would we tell – we want our neighbors who are Democrats to see themselves in our party too. Why would we tell – we wouldn't tell a candidate to go say, to hell with the Democrats, we're going to run on our own. You can't ever do that. You don't say to hell with anybody. You want some Republican voters. You want some conservative voters if you can get them. So, I mean, that's politics is an additive function. You build. You don't say who you're not. Well, sorry to ramble on like that, but
no, it's okay. It's a very interesting explanation of the view of the WFP as a third party, one of two that survived some of these changes. The WFP and the Conservative Party. And tough times for other third parties. You will hear from them on future programs. But Jesse, Lenny, thanks for making the time and laying it out for us and letting people know about what you have going on in WFP despite these challenges. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you. And if you're even considering running, please try the questionnaire and reach out for help if you need help on it.
Jesse Lenny is a state committee member of the New York Working Families Party from Congressional District 25. We've got more connections coming up.